In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Wednesday, May 19th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our industry chatter series continues, talking about doing business with the government, the B2G angle, with Tom Simmons of Citrix. Tom, it's a pleasure to have you here in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Francis, it's a pleasure for me to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for doing it. For people who don't know about your company, give us the elevator speech about what Citrix does.
So we are a 21-year-old firm that's been in the information technology business doing virtualization for the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Today, virtual computing is our primary offering. We just finished our big annual customer event in San Francisco last week called Synergy.
Mm-hmm.
And the theme around that is a good summary of what we do. It's where virtualization and networking meet cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have offerings in all those areas, and the government is taking advantage of those today.
How do you think the agencies are doing, just kind of across the board, on really understanding the potential of virtualization and cloud computing? Are they getting it? Are they into it? Or are they kind of being pushed toward it? What's your sense of that?
So on the virtualization side, I think there are agencies that are very far along in realizing the benefits of virtualization, especially mm-hmm. in the data center. Beyond that, virtualizing storage, virtualizing applications, and the hot topic today in that space is virtualizing desktops.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a progression and folks are beginning to see the benefits of that. Relative to cloud, I think we're not quite that far along. There's still a lot of policy issues and security concerns about putting compute, work up in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So most of what we're seeing today in federal are the early stages of private clouds, which really is just an extension of a privately owned virtual data center,
mm-hmm.
moving those workloads into somebody else's data center
right.
or data centers, if you will.
Mm-hmm. That phenomenon I find interesting. I've had a number of CIOs say this is what we're looking at as kind of an incremental step. And it struck me that when they call it a private cloud, it's not really a private cloud. It's just a bunch of servers in a different place than they are now.
Well, it's interesting. When you look at what DISA has done over the years in building out mega centers and hosting applications for DoD customers in those mega centers,
mm-hmm.
Today their ability to migrate workloads from one mega center to another, that's cloud computing.
Yeah.
So a lot of it has to do with semantics and spinning, if you will.
Yeah.
But it really, cloud computing really is nothing more than provisioning a compute environment across multiple locations
mm-hmm.
and then being able to take advantage of those multiple locations on demand.
Mm-hmm.
Private clouds, you've got some companies that are in that business today that have multiple data centers that meet government security requirements,
mm-hmm.
the Carpathias, the Terramarks of the world. So they have an offering in private cloud,
mm-hmm.
and it's really nice for the government because for augmenting compute capacity, they can do that on demand, minimal monthly retainer fee, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and then a usage charge.
Yeah.
And that really is a good application and definition of private cloud computing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the public clouds you'll see from Google and from Amazon and things like that. And you do see government utilizing those public cloud capabilities for the odd job.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of that in the test dev world. I got a compute job. I don't have data center capacity to run it right now. I'll put my credit card out on Amazon,
mm-hmm.
run it, get my results, and that's all the obligation that I have.
Yeah. I respectfully call some folks, some IT folks in the government, server huggers, in that they have they just have this issue about being able to let go of their own machines that they can go and touch their own data centers. Are you seeing that resistance start to recede a little bit as people understand the savings potential especially?
I'm not so sure it's the savings potential, but the answer to the question is yes. We're absolutely starting to see it recede. I don't know if it's generational. I don't know if it's cultural, but we are seeing a change in that application owner wanting to go to the data center, see the four servers with
yep.
his name on them
mm-hmm.
and those blinking lights. That's my work being done. I think with the advent of data center virtualization and virtual servers in government data centers, we're seeing less and less of that reliance on specifying the iron and the operating system that an application is going to run on.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about response times. Give me this kind of performance on my application, and if you can do that, I don't really care what you're running.
Yeah. What's the kind of the next step, I guess? You talked about private clouds, and that's kind of confirming what I've been hearing about that being the interim step. How far off do you think we are from some agencies really being able to say, I'm ready to do it, and I'm ready to go full bore?
I would say we're still years away from that.
Mm-hmm.
There's still the security questions that need to be answered relative to public clouds. Once you're putting data that is, you know, in government protected by a whole cadre of laws instead of just a HIPAA requirement for healthcare in the commercial space or something like that,
mm-hmm.
You have a whole different set of concerns,
mm-hmm.
valid concerns that govern IT decision makers have to deal with. So there's going to have to be more work done from those public cloud providers to meet the unique requirements of the government IT community.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's absolutely doable.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at some of the capacity and capability that Google, as an example, is doing for the financial industry.
Yeah.
The security requirements, the intellectual property is every bit as valuable. It's just governed and managed in a different way.
What are the vendors doing, though, for the private sector companies that are really aggressively moving to the cloud that government agencies are not asking for, or that vendors aren't doing or maybe able to do for the government yet? Is that really just a regulatory issue?
It goes beyond regulatory. I think in this case, the government, rightly so, is going to let the private sector establish the best practices mm-hmm. in the industry
and make
standards.
The mistakes.
And exactly.
Have
make
the
mistakes and get on the front page of the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And once those things have been tried, tested, and proven, I think then you'll see more of a willingness for government IT decision makers to move things into the public cloud. I think part of that, too, is justifying financially and management-wise, a move to cloud computing with the private cloud projects that are going on,
mm-hmm.
To show that there is truly a cost savings in terms of hardware investment and software investment, in terms of people investment and how much it takes to build out and manage that infrastructure. So as those things are proven in the early implementations of private clouds,
mm-hmm.
and then we can expand those to public cloud offerings where I make less of an investment in infrastructure,
yeah.
then you'll see it happen more quickly.
The CIOs are asking all the time for the power of the purse, and it sounds like that's a situation where, because they don't have it, they are strategizing that the incremental step will be better to be able to then go back up the chain and say, this is why we should continue to move in
Absolutely.
This direction.
It's one thing to prove it on paper.
Yeah.
It's another thing to prove it in practice. And I think this is one of those things that will have to be proven in practice.
What are you seeing and what are your clients telling you in the government about trying to deal with some of the open government initiative and transparency issues and all those kinds of things? At the same time, trying to deal with some of the things that you're talking about virtualization and so forth.
So from our perspective, what we're seeing in that regard is a tidal wave of data.
Mm-hmm.
There's just more information that needs to be compiled. There's more information that needs to be sorted and searched and then put out there in the public forums for scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't, as a government IT community, had to do that to a great deal over time. So it's building the practices, it's building the processes around compiling that data, organizing it in such a way that can be put out there, and then putting it out there in such a way that it's viewable,
mm-hmm.
but you can't go tamper with it.
Right.
So from a virtualization perspective as a IT company, Citrix sees that as a huge opportunity because now we can, with some of the remote access technologies that we bring to the marketplace, we can show the government ways that not only can you compile this and put it in mass storage, but we can really accelerate access to it either within the government or from outside government.
Mm-hmm.
And we can show ways that folks can get in for collaboration purposes, see the data, maybe manipulate it a little bit, but not change it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the biggest concerns about putting data out there in this transparency thing is how much do I expose that data to somebody else going in and changing it?
Yeah. That's the part of the conversation that I think hasn't been had yet. A lot of discussion about how to make sure that when the data is made available, that it's clean.
Right.
And the whole garbage in, garbage out discussion. But once it's hung out there, then what happens to it if everybody and his brother can get their hands on it?
Yep.
And play around with it. Tom Simmons of Citrix is my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Continue our conversation in a moment.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at myvillagegreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
Successful federal managers know it's vital to stay at the top of their game, and to do that, they turn to ESI International for help gaining and maintaining critical FACC, FACPPM, FACCOTAR, and DAU certifications. ESI trains more than 10,000 government employees each year, helping prepare them to meet any challenge. Classes start weekly on weekends and are available anytime online. For more information or to register today, visit ESIFederal.com. Strengthen your career and build your resume. ESIFederal.com.
Isn't it funny how just when you think you've had the best time of your life, life makes you think differently? Remember your first kiss? How would you top that? And that summer before college. But then college came and poof, you almost forgot those times you would never forget. There was the romance that swept you off your feet, and the wedding that took everyone's breath away. And the only thing more amazing than how beautiful your babies were was what wonderful people they turned out to be. Well, guess what? If you think life just couldn't get better, we've got news for you. It can. And that's the best reason for getting a mammogram. At Kaiser Permanente, more women do. And that's how we know regular screens are one sure way to make certain you live long and thrive. You want to know what happens next? Go for your next mammogram and stick around. Things are going to get a lot more interesting. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
To learn more, go to kp.org/mymammogram. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Here's Pablo Martinez, special agent in charge of Criminal Investigative Division, U.S. Secret Service, on the 21st Century Cybersecurity Panel, sponsored by ArcSight.
I think the Secret Service supports any bills that would create a more robust workforce for the federal government. A lot of what some of these bills are trying to do are things that we've been doing in the past with several federally funded research and development centers, where we're taking advantage of technologies that have been funded maybe by other federal agencies, and we're looking at the applicability of those technologies.
To listen to the whole program made possible by ArcSight, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
NATO, the Federal Reserve, World Bank, the Department of Treasury, what do they have in common? All turned to ArcSight to secure their critical information and operations. ArcSight identifies, assesses, and mitigates internal and external cyber threats. With the market-leading ArcSight SIEM platform, organizations can safeguard their assets, comply with regulatory policy, and control risks associated with cyber attacks. Learn more at ArcSight.com. ArcSight.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Dorabeck Insider. Happy birthday to data.gov. 1 year ago that the Obama administration launched this innovative site for making government data publicly available. What are the lessons learned? We'll talk to federal CIO Vivek Kundra and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's on Twitter. He's on Facebook. Well, why? We'll hear about the Joint Chiefs Gov 2.0 strategy. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Tom Simmons, Area Vice President of Federal Systems at Citrix. And we were talking about doing business with the government in the first segment. One of the things, Tom, that people have been talking about a lot lately is the collaboration concept, the B2G collaboration element, and the fact that agencies are getting a lot more willing, responsive to talking to vendors before the requirements for a new thing even come out, so that the goal, obviously, is to have better requirements. You have less requirements creep because things that get forgotten don't get forgotten, that kind of thing. Are you seeing that also, or is this is there still a fair amount of work to be done in that area?
So while there is a fair amount of work to be done, I think that's one of the real benefits that we're seeing today as part of procurement reform, is that there is more of a willingness to share what's the problem, what am I really trying to solve here, and let industry get creative about how we apply our technologies mm-hmm. to the solution of the problem. When I first got into this business too many years ago, it was, I'm going to write the requirement, and we're not going to have a conversation unless I just want a one-way conversation. You come in and give me a capabilities overview, mm-hmm. tell me what you can do, and then I'm going to go write the requirement, and you'll respond to the requirement.
Mm-hmm.
I like to share my experience. When I started this whole thing, I was at Hayes,
uh-huh.
the modem company.
Yeah.
And then it was 2400 baud communication and a little smart modem.
That screamed every time you tried to log on. Yeah,
exactly.
I remember.
Exactly. So there was an agency that was looking to write a spec for 2400 baud communications. And we all did the same thing.
Uh-huh.
Hayes came in, we gave our presentation, our three competitive companies came in, and then the government did the one from column A, one from column B, one from column C, and wrote a modem spec that nobody met. So as a result, two of us decided we'd go build a modem
uh-huh.
to meet that spec, but the cost of that modem was three times what
right.
the industry standard was.
Uh-huh.
So that's the beauty, like I said, of procurement reform recently, is that COTS technology has become far more acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Application of COTS technology and having those discussions up front. Tell me what the problem. Let's get on the same side of the table. Understand what the problem is. Scope it and then put solutions together, or put requirements together where solutions exist today, or where the uniqueness in the solution comes with the systems integrator who puts the technology pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the differentiation comes in evaluating RFPs, is there's a lot of cool technologies out there. I doubt there's any one way to solve any problem in government today. So it's how do we take all these bits and pieces of technology, cobble mm-hmm. them together in a solution, and then price that solution in such a way that it meets all of the government's requirements.
You mentioned the resistance to COTS, and I wonder if some of my server hugger friends weren't at one point the people who were also requiring custom-written software for every single application in government, because it seems to be the same mentality.
It is, and you know, here again, I think that the obligations and responsibility of government IT employees is a little bit different than the commercial or private sector space.
Mm-hmm.
Add to that that most private sector IT decision makers have some kind of a shareholder or profit motive that's going to drive them in a direction.
Mm-hmm.
They can afford to be a little more innovative, a little more risk-taking, because with the risk comes a lot of reward. Government has to be risk-averse in a lot of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, you do see evolution sometimes being a little slower. But I think that's the prudent way for a lot of these things to work.
Well, and I guess the argument would be on the government side, if we go back to the cloud computing discussion that we had, where we're going to let the private sector companies make the mistakes and have the disasters, maybe that's not such a bad strategy. I mean, I know the agencies get hammered for that a lot.
So but. I try not to wrap myself in the flag when I'm selling our requirements internally, but if the Army puts an application up in the cloud and somebody steals that data, people die.
Mm-hmm.
If a bank does that, people probably don't die. There may be financial consequences. So having the private sector test out these things and make the mistakes first and then let the government learn from that, not a bad thing.
Yeah. Tom Simmons of Citrix is my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our conversation continues in a moment. More details on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We'll be right back.
News Radio. I'm Tom Costello. On a state visit to the White House, Mexican President Felipe Calderon condemned a tough new immigration law in Arizona, calling it discriminatory to Mexicans. President Obama said the law is misdirected.
I want everyone, American and Mexican, to know my administration is taking a very close look at the Arizona law. We're examining any implications, especially for civil rights.
But President Obama is pushing federal immigration reform as the real answer. New underwater video released by BP shows oil and gas erupting under pressure in big, dark clouds from the blowout on the ocean floor. BP and the Coast Guard say about 210,000 gallons of oil a day are gushing from the well, but other experts say it is likely much more. And some county workers in suburban Atlanta are being asked to give back thousands of dollars. The county says they were overpaid more than 15 years ago. They got two options, pay up with cash or vacation time. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
Meet Patrick and Peggy English, owners of a new Chevy Malibu.
My wife had been a Toyota owner for many years and thought she always would be. With the Malibu, we were able to get the safety along with the other features that were important to us. I would recommend it to anybody who is looking for a family sedan, high quality, good mileage, and very safe.
I'm very, very happy with the car.
To hear more of Patrick and Peggy's story and to learn more about Malibu, visit Chevy.com and may the best car win.
Joining me today is Carl. Carl loves his new camper, and he also loves finding ways to save money, like cutting his own hair.
Cereal bowl and scissors, all you need.
Or doing his own dental work.
It only hurts when you're chewing.
He uses tin cans and string instead of a cell phone.
No roaming charges.
But you don't have to be like Carl, because GEICO makes it easy to save on insurance for your RV, camper, or trailer. To see how much you can save, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-442-9253.
Checking your daily TSP ticker. The latest numbers from May 18th, 2010. The G Fund is unchanged at $13.28. The F Fund rises 0.04 at $13.85. But the C Fund loses 0.19 at $13.38. The S Fund loses 0.31 at $17.92. The I Fund drops 0.30 at $16.45. Losses for your L Funds. The 2040 is down 0.19 at $15.61. The 2030 falls 0.16 at $15.47. The 2020 down 0.13 at $15.34. The 2010 falls 0.05 at $15.38. And the L Income is down 0.04 at $14.03. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
There is a watchmaking standard that is revered around the world. That standard comes from Rolex. From clasp to bracelet to its unique watertight oyster case, a Rolex holds its value because it was intended to. Crafted from just three precious metals, platinum, steel, and gold, each defies the ordinary. Its steel, 904L, virtually indestructible and corrosion resistant, is incomparable. Its patented Everrose Gold, created in an exclusive foundry, will remain beautiful for life. Inside, a genuine Rolex movement is a product of superiority and remarkable testing. It is unrivaled. At Rolex, flawless standards create more than a watch. They create a value that was meant to endure. For a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store since 1900. Tourneau, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arinc.
Congressional investigators say some of the same intelligence failures that led to the 9/11 attacks also allowed a man to slip on board a U.S. jetliner with a bomb on Christmas. The Obama administration says the nearly catastrophic bombing was not a failure to collect and share, but it was a failure to understand the intelligence. The Senate Intelligence Committee disagrees. A 16-page summary of its investigation points out the problems. I'm J.J. Green.
If you've ever stumbled in the dark, did you ever stop to think how difficult it is for our military to see what they need to see and nothing else during night warfare? Airink has. Airink provides design solutions for night vision devices, helmet-mounted displays, and laser eye protection, just to name a few. They help all branches of our armed forces to see better, fly and land faster, and most importantly, more safely. Airink helps today's military forces become ready for tonight's warfare challenges. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Hey, all right, it's the Geico Gecko here, and I've got a special message for all you government employees listening out there. So all you non-government people can go and make yourself a sandwich or whatever. Okay, are they gone? Right, so here's the big news. As a government employee, you could qualify for a federal employee discount on car insurance. And that's on top of Geico's already low rates. In other words, my friend, you could be the or more, and you could save 15% or more. And you'd be in good company, too. On average, federal employees who are GEICO customers stay GEICO customers for 12 years or more. And that's either because they like geckos or they like saving money. Well, maybe a little of both.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Hey, everyone. This is Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit GEICO.com and see how much you could save.
The American Council for Technology is celebrating 30 years of collaboration between government and industry. The upcoming Management of Change Conference features speakers, workshops, best practices, and networking opportunities, all focusing on the government's IT strategic agenda. Building on the success of the past 30 years of collaboration, this conference is a must-attend for government and industry IT leaders. Mark your calendar for May 23rd through the 25th at the Lowe's Philadelphia Hotel. For more information or to register, go to actgov.org/MOC2010. Register today.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for the hour, engaging in some industry chatter, is Tom Simmons, Area Vice President of Federal Systems at Citrix Systems. And one of the things that people in your role have been thinking about and talking about and maybe grinding their teeth at night about is insourcing. The president has talked and a number of people at OMB have talked about the idea that we really want to look at what's inherently governmental and what isn't. And that's a debate. I mean, you could come back and we could do a whole hour on right. What's inherently governmental, I imagine. But that discussion is starting to take place. But it seems like some agencies are not waiting for that discussion to take place and starting to make some moves and decide we want to do these things ourselves instead of going into the contracting community and buying them. And I wonder if insourcing has impacted either your company or the companies that you do business with to serve the government or the agencies that you deal with.
So I think it's having an impact on all three. From an impact on our company, it's not having a direct impact in terms of our employee population or the way we do business with the government. But the folks that administer and touch our Citrix environments is changing. It's changing from primarily a contractor community to, you know, in some cases, insourced resources. So the companies that we do business with, as a manufacturer, we tend not to do the direct sale to the government. We rely on a cadre of partners. And while we work with systems integrators, the insourcing impact on them is, I won't say minimal, but it's not nearly as significant to the overall as it is with some of the small technology VARs that we do business with, where, you know, they make the investment in their employees to get them trained and certified on not only our technologies, but all the complementing technologies that have to come along with that. Microsoft, Cisco, HP and the like. And they put them out there on contract to the government. The government's first look to insourcing those kinds of capabilities is to hire the very people that have been on site for the last 2 years doing the work.
Yeah.
And that happening to some of these small and mid-tier integrators is having a huge impact on the companies and their ability to maintain viability in this marketplace, because the commercial economies are not coming back as rapidly as I think some of the indicators are saying. So it is having a pretty significant impact on some of our partners. Now, the whole conversation about what is inherently government, Yeah, it's one that can go in a whole lot of areas. And I do think it's cyclical. I know less than 5 years ago on an airplane down to Montgomery for the Air Force IT conference, flying down with an Air Force officer who at the time was saying, you know, the Air Force's business is flying airplanes and logistics.
Mm-hmm.
Our business is not information technology.
Yeah.
There are companies out there that do that much, much better and more cost effectively than we will ever do. That was at a time when outsourcing was kind of the accepted practice.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I don't think the requirements have changed. The Air Force's business is still about flying airplanes and logistics.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a movement to bring in that expertise and make them government employees.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy to talk about what's inherently government and not in the military community and DOD.
Yeah.
You get into some of the civilian agencies, and it may be a little less cut and dried and clear. But across the board, we're seeing in the IT departments a move away from such a heavy reliance on contractors.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the swing from outsourcing to insourcing is as dramatic? Is the pendulum swing as wide as it's being made out to be? And I'll be the first to admit that media outlets like ours probably contribute to that a little bit.
So I don't see it in terms of, you know, big personnel moves.
Uh-huh.
We're seeing, you know, the Citrix administrator that was a government or was a contractor employee last quarter is now wearing a government employee badge. That's not a huge population.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not seeing that happen to a great scale. So I don't know that it is as dramatic a swing as some might make it out to be today.
Mm-hmm.
But the swing's not done, and we don't know how far it's going to go.
Is it getting easier or harder, do you think, to do business with the government because of the insourcing and the issues with requirements that we talked about earlier and those kinds of things?
So I think in a lot of areas it's getting easier to do business. I mean, the whole acceptance of COTS technologies, procurement reform, trying to make the government act and buy more like the private sector with best value kind of acquisitions and less of a reliance on a big, long, formal RFP process and task order kinds of things. I think in those regards, it's getting easier.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big challenge for government across the board today is the acquisition community, the contracting officers. There's not enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're so busy doing a volume that is not really fair to put on them that they can't invest in training and better processes and just more efficient acquisitions.
Yeah.
So I think the emphasis on the administration for beefing up the acquisition community is the right thing to do, and that will make things that much more easier for us to do business with the government.
But that kind of pushes you back to the whole insourcing discussion that we just had, because agencies say the best place for them to find acquisition people are from the companies that they're buying from.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, when you start taking away from the population of people that support you, and then there comes a time when you need to augment and go to that community for support, there's nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a tough situation for, not only the government, but the folks that are supporting the government.
Let's talk a little bit about talent when we come back. I have to take another break, but let's do that when we continue with Tom Simmons, Area Vice President of Federal Systems at Citrix on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in a moment.
Manager, Enterprise Data Center Operations, FAA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization and Data Center Management Strategies, sponsored by Riverbed.
Right now, we're having to focus a lot of energy on providing reliable computing services. With virtualization moving to the cloud, I believe we can make that all disappear behind the wall so that the government doesn't have to be so focused on that the rest of the IT resources can be looking at how do we make the government perform like the commercial businesses.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group,
log on to federalnewsradio.com.
How do you consolidate IT without compromising performance? Make it happen with Riverbed. With our WAN optimization solutions, you can virtualize your government data center with ease. Plug and play in as little as 15 minutes. Cut IT costs up to 30%. Accelerate agency applications up to 100 times. And keep data safe and secure. Learn more and download a free white paper at riverbed.com/virtualization. Riverbed. Think fast.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Tom Simmons of Citrix Systems. And we've been talking about a lot of issues in the way that your company does business with other companies and with the government and so on. A lot of the issues that we see come down to talent and the people who are available to do all of these transactions both before and after their bid and everything is arranged. I wonder what you think about the idea that it seems that the government and companies like yours and the small VARs that you were talking about before and the largest companies are really competing for the same group of people. We've talked about the idea that finding acquisition people, the government comes to the private sector, and the whole discussion about the contractors raiding the agencies has been going on for decades. It seems like everybody's fighting over the same, like, 50 or 75 people.
I'm not sure the size of the pool.
Right.
But yeah,
I may be exaggerating a little bit there.
I think you're right on there because, I mean, just from a let's start with the kinds of things that we do. Applying virtualization technologies and networking technologies to the specific and unique requirements of government infrastructure. It's not as simple as plucking an IT administrator out of Merck or Bank of America and bring them in and say, do the same thing here that you did there, because there's a whole different set of government regulations about what you can and can't do. There's a whole different set of requirements, as the government is wont to remind us at every turn. Their networks, their requirements are bigger by a scale of 10 to hundreds from what most private agencies have in terms of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a limited talent pool from an IT expertise. Take that then once we've decided on how we're going to solve the problem with the technology capabilities, the procurement shops, the contracting and acquisition professionals, everybody's seen the FAR. There's volumes of law that applies to what these guys can and cannot do. It's perfectly acceptable in the private sector, in a lot of cases, for purchasing agents and contracting decision makers to go have dinner, to accept gratuities mm-hmm. from the people that are trying to do business with them.
Mm-hmm.
You bring that same practice to the government, and it's absolutely forbidden, and it takes years to go through all of those regulations, to go through all of the things that are associated with those regulations in terms of practices and personal conduct,
mm-hmm.
And then apply the way a specific agency implements those things. And you're talking years of investment in an individual to get the basic skills up to a level of professionalism and proficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the place we're in right now. If you look at an acquisition talent pool, it's either folks in that will implement and conduct federal procurements. It's either in the government or it's in the contracting community that does business with the government. And it's unless you're going to recruit it right out of colleges and train them up from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's a long-term investment that takes you a while before you can get a return on.
I have asked a number of people inside the government what's on somebody's resume that indicates to you, other than I've done it for a contractor in the private sector, what's on somebody's resume that says to you this is somebody that is a potentially good contracting officer? A lot of people are not really able to answer that question because it's kind of I'll know it when I see it kind of deal. And so that it seems to me that makes it even more challenging when we're talking about that as opposed to some of the other areas where government's trying to hire a bunch of people like cyber and things like that, because it's kind of the requirements for the people are so ambiguous.
Absolutely. And you know, hiring is not a science. I mean, you know, there are some jobs out there where you can check the boxes and feel pretty confident that you've made a good hire.
Mm-hmm.
But in today's world, whether it's in business or in government, not only do you need the technical skills, but you need the interpersonal skills, you need the work ethic, you need all of these things that come in the package that is you. And making decisions and making repeated decisions that are always right to make sure that you got the right people doing the right jobs, motivated to do more, and in some cases do more with less, is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And hiring talent is something that even in private sector, we don't do a lot of training towards. So it does come down to, you know, what's intuition and my experience bring to the table.
Is there a role, do you think, for companies to provide, maybe pool together under some umbrella, a trade organization or something like that, to provide a mechanism where these people will get this information and training on kind of an accelerated schedule? Because if you agree with the mm-hmm. 5 to 7 year window, we were talking yep. about it before we went back on the air, that's about how long it takes for somebody to come into government, sit in the seat until they're really up right. to speed and can do a procurement on their own. That means if we hire all these procurement people and they start on Monday, it's 2015 to 2017 before we're really in a situation that yep. we want to be. In the meantime, do you think there's a role for the private sector somehow to try to at least help to fill that void?
Yeah, absolutely there is. And I know we belong, and I'm going to forget the name of it, but we belong to an organization of procurement professionals. And it's a combination of government and industry in a trade association, and there are quarterly meetings where we get together and we talk about, you know, the challenges of government, the challenges of building talent, mm-hmm. so forth and so on. And at those meetings, they do offer trainings, and they have access to curriculum for more in-depth training around that. So, yeah, I think there absolutely is a role for industry to participate in the training of this expertise. A lot of us are doing it within our own organizations to make sure that not only do we understand the rules so that we don't break them,
mm-hmm.
we understand the rules so we can do a better job of meeting the government's requirements. You know, the whole discussion of outsourcing then becomes, if I make that investment in somebody and the insourcing needle points my way, do I lose that person and all the investment that I've made there? And given what happens when somebody moves from industry to government, I don't have a whole lot of leverage to go back and say, work with me
yeah.
now that you're there.
Right. Yeah, that's slightly forbidden. Tom Simmons, the Area Vice President of Federal Systems at Citrix Systems, my guest for the hour on In-Depth with Francis Rose. Back in a moment to wrap up our conversation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
As government and commercial companies continue to improve their business processes, they're finding that IT requirement analysis, market reviews, product selection, and ongoing operations are taxing the resource base of their employees. TMR is here to help. TMR provides enterprise architecture, governance, and IT operational support to ensure our customers' IT investments are aligned with specific business goals, objectives, and capital investment strategies. For more details, visit TMR at tmrhq.com or call 703-323-1700.
Why do some big government initiatives succeed while others fail? How can we achieve better results in government? These questions and more are examined in the new book, If We Can Put a Man on the Moon, Getting Big Things Done in Government, co-authored by Deloitte's Bill Eggers. Visit Deloitte.com/US/Man on the Moon to learn more about the book that serves as a roadmap for overcoming some of our nation's biggest implementation challenges.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. The right technology, right away.
Morning stretches, biking to work, quick walks at lunch, shopping at the farmer's market, getting all your antioxidants, flavonoids, and omega-3s while staying properly hydrated. Oh, and don't forget 8 hours of good sleep. Trying to live a healthy lifestyle doesn't leave a lot of time for managing your health care. That's why Kaiser Permanente offers members My Health Manager, an online tool you can use to proactively manage health care for you and your family members, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Have a question for your doctor? Email your doctor's office and get a response. Make, cancel, or reschedule routine appointments. Get test results, check recent immunization records, view most of your medical history, and order prescription refills. All in a secure environment, all at your convenience, all so you have more time to thrive. To learn more about My Health Manager, visit kp.org. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest for the hour is Tom Simmons, Area Vice President of Federal Systems at Citrix Systems. And we're just about done for the hour. I shouldn't plug it like you're going to be here for this tremendous amount of time. Dorbeck Insider is on at 3 o'clock this afternoon until 7 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. A lot of what we've talked about in this hour, Tom, has been the process that you go through or that your partner companies go through in doing business with the government. And just like the shift in contracting has shifted from these particular steps to performance-based contracting, Jeff Zients talks all the time about measuring results and not process. Are you seeing that from your perspective, that there is a shift from talking about step one, step two, step three, and checking off the boxes to did we really get what we wanted? Did we really get a solution to the problem that we had?
We're seeing progress. And I mean, you know, from dashboards on, you know, enterprise IT level that Vivek Kundra is promoting to specific agency objectives, I think we are seeing a greater emphasis on the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
But culture is a hard thing to change. And there is a cultural bias to focusing on the process, make sure that everybody's treated fairly and equally, and make sure that all of the regs are comprehended and that we don't do things outside that, that sometimes the results or the outcomes get lost in that focus on process.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like with anything, when you've got transient management on long-term objectives, you must expect that the objectives and the anticipated outcomes are going to change as you get new leadership and new decision makers come in. So some of these long-term objectives, especially around IT infrastructure and how it can be used to make government more efficient and more secure and all that, we've seen a tremendous change in that with this administration coming in last year. With that change, the results, the things that they're looking for are going to change. But I do believe that without a focus on results, you can get all caught up in the process. And the perception from the outside for the average citizen would be, you know, we spent all this money, we've churned a whole lot of stuff, but when I look at the results, they're the same. How can that be? Working with these folks, I absolutely understand how that can be. And it's going to take a real focus by leadership and by industry to set those goals and objectives and stay focused on them, and get those processes to work to get to where the results are better.
We only have about a minute left. Are you optimistic, pessimistic, or agnostic about the fact that that can happen?
I try to always to be optimistic about everything. It's part of my job description. I do see a lot of the things that have taken place in the last year as pointing in that direction. We need to give a little more time to play out.
There, speaking of more time, I have about 10-15 more things on my list, as I always do, that I'd like to cover when we get to the end of the hour. So I would love to have you come back at some point and continue this conversation. It would be great to have you back.
Would love to do it, Francis.
Tom Simmons of Citrix, Area Vice President of Federal Systems, on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Some programming notes that on Friday's program, of course, as always, the Federal News Countdown, happening in the 2 o'clock hour, and on tomorrow's program, we'll introduce you to who you'll be hearing from on the Friday Countdown show. The Dorbeck Insider with Federal News Radio's Chris Dorbeck is up next, and Chris will be in shortly to tell you what's happening on his show this afternoon between 3 and 7 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thanks for listening.